Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We are scheduled to be joined this hour by Will Cain. Usually he's on with us Wednesday. I was out yesterday. For those of you waking up, I had an incredible time at the distillery. If you are a fan at all of bourbon, of whiskey, Buffalo Trace in Frankfort, Kentucky, it's free to go tour. And so there's no cost. You can go through, look at how they make all of their product. They have got an unbelievable collection of big-time brands. Buffalo Trace, obviously their biggest and best known, but some of their brands, like, you can't even get them. Dub, do you drink much whiskey or bourbon?
Yeah, I've actually been on a big bourbon kick throughout the
pandemic. It's super popular now.
Yeah, it's great.
And if you, like, some of their bourbons are so wildly popular that it's difficult to actually find them. They're one of the things that's, I think, is so interesting is they basically sell everything that they make. So they have so many different cool brands and so many different spirits that they produce that, and it's for those of you out there, and look, I mean, I love this stuff. They got Buffalo Trace, which is their biggest brand. And then they've got the Colonel E.H. Taylor, which is less popular. Eagle Rare. And when I say less popular, I mean less available. It's actually more popular. Eagle Rare, George T. Stagg. I mean, so many of these. Weller, which has been super popular for a long time down in Texas, but is now starting to spread. Blanton's, which a lot of people are familiar with. And then the Pappy Van Winkle, which that stuff sells for insane amounts. But it was really cool. Like, we walked through and saw all the different barrels and the way that they store them and discussed why the flavors end up existing as they do. We saw where they're creating all of the different brands and all the different. I mean, it was a really awesome experience. But anyway, if you're looking for something cool to do, it doesn't cost anything. You can go. It's free. There's no cost for the tours. It's in Frankfort, Kentucky. Maybe you're kind of itching to get out and do something after being shut down for so long. I had not toured that distillery before. And it was pretty awesome. Really cool experience to get to go through and check it out. So that's where I was on Wednesday. I missed the show, but that's what I had going on. So I'm back with you guys now. And like many of you, the NFL owns me. I was sitting down eager to see, even though we already knew exactly who your favorite team was playing. We didn't know the order in which they were going to be playing. And I got to be honest with you. The NFL, I believe, put together a week one schedule. I think 16 games they put out there. I think that 15 of them are already electric. Man, I can't wait to see what's going to happen in this game. And even the 16th, just kind of letting you know the game that's the worst. I think the worst game of the opening weekend is the Jags on the road against the Texans. And there's certainly a lot of sexy storylines with the Jags, with Trevor Lawrence, Urban Meyer back, Tim Tebow maybe on this team. We talked about that a little bit in the first hour. But the Texans are just so god-awful. I'm sorry, Houston Texans fans. But I can't get excited about a team that's going to roll out to Rod Taylor and Davis Mills as their 1-2 options at quarterback. Just not going to buy into it at all. And so as you look at every other game, I was thinking to myself, you know what? What are the five best games in my mind? If I had to rank, if I could only, I'm going to end up watching, truth be told, giving you a little bit of a preview of what I'm going to be doing in September. I'm going to watch at least some part of all 16 of these games on the opening weekend, beginning with Thursday, Monday night, all the way through, right? I'm going to watch at least part of every single game. What are the five best? Because the NFL, as we get ready for week one, what are the five best games that are out there? I broke them down a little bit for you in the first hour of the program, but I didn't tell you what I thought were the five best games, so I'm going to count them down. Here is the fifth best game of opening weekend in my mind. It's the Seahawks on the road against the Colts. Why do I think that's one of the five best games? We had a lot of drama in the offseason surrounding Russell Wilson. Seems like the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson are back in a decent space for the two of them. DK Metcalf, we talked about this earlier this week, training like a fiend for sprinting. I think DK Metcalf is the biggest and best physically dominant receiver that we have seen in the NFL in a long time. But I wonder about the behind-the-scenes relationship that's going on in Seattle between Pete Carroll, ownership, management, and Russell Wilson, effectively their football CEO. What's going to happen there? Meanwhile, what's going to happen with Carson Wentz? He's stepping in for Phillip Rivers. They've got a decent offensive line. Left tackle probably not going to be ready, Fisher, coming off of the injury that he had. But they feel like they've protected Carson Wentz's blind side. The best year Carson Wentz ever had in his career back in 2017, when he would have been MVP if he hadn't torn his ACL, was with Frank Reich. Is Carson Wentz going to step in beginning in week one with the Indianapolis Colts and not miss a beat and demonstrate that he is the Carson Wentz who got the $100 million contract? Or is Frank Reich not going to be able to work his magic with Carson Wentz? And are we going to see the player that was ultimately benched by the Philadelphia Eagles? I think it's the fifth best game on opening weekend. Can't wait to watch. Steelers at the Bills. Josh Allen, 59% passer to a 69% completion percentage passer. Stephon Diggs stepped in, and even with COVID issues, limiting how much they could work together in the offseason, this guy and Diggs, they immediately created a Batman and Robin-like relationship, having a tremendous amount of success right out of the gates. So are the Steelers, who are going on the road against the Bills, the team that started off 11-0, or are they the pretender that collapsed down the stretch and got waxed by the Cleveland Browns in the postseason? Does Ben Roethlisberger still have some juice left? Is it possible that Najee Harris can take some of the weight off his shoulders, that Steeler offensive line can improve? Or are the Steelers going to stumble out of the gate this year, continuing the way they finished last season, given how competitive the AFC North is likely to be with the Ravens and the Browns, not to mention the Bengals better than they have been before? And meanwhile, can the Bills take the proverbial next step? Defensively, they had some major weaknesses that caught up with them. They won, however, two postseason games. They beat the Colts and they beat the Ravens. Can the Bills fight their way back to the AFC Championship game and finally get back to another Super Bowl? Things are moving in the right direction in Buffalo, but are they ready to take the next step? I think the Steelers coming to town is a great test. It's the fourth best game in my mind of opening weekend. About the Dolphins going on the road against the Patriots, I've got it as the third best game of opening weekend. Look, there's a lot of drama here. Bill Belichick brings in Cam Newton for a second year, and then all of a sudden Mac Jones falls at 15 to Belichick. Mac Jones now the highest drafted quarterback that Belichick's ever taken in his career as a head coach in the NFL. Plus, Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, major additions in the free agent marketplace for the Patriots, who had a lot of players opt out, many of those players now returning after sitting out a season because of COVID. Will the Patriots be able to return to an elite level in the AFC East, or with Brady gone, will they continue to struggle to be a 500-ish team? It's possible that this could be Mac Jones against Tua if Mac Jones were to beat out Cam Newton. I think that's very unlikely, but it's at least possible. So there are a ton of storylines on the New England Patriots side of the equation. You know that Bill Belichick has been stewing over the entire offseason, whether he will admit it or not, with Brady being able to go down to Tampa Bay and immediately win a championship. On the other side of the ball, Brian Flores, year three of his regime in Miami. You go get Jalen Waddle. There's no Ryan Fitzpatrick to back him up anymore and save him. This is Tua Tagovailoa's year to sink or swim. Is he going to be an elite-level playmaker at the NFL in the quarterback position? We will start to find out in week one. Weather's not a concern. You're going on the road in Foxborough. The Dolphins going up against the Patriots. Third best game, I should say, of the opening weekend. Second best game. Browns and Baker Mayfield, baby, going on the road in Kansas City for a rematch of the divisional game that they almost found a way to win after they knocked Patrick Mahomes out of that game with an injury. The Browns weren't quite ready to take the next step. They got the ball back with a chance to potentially win the game. They couldn't move the football. The Chiefs found a way to win and went ahead and advanced, won the AFC the next week against the Bills, and went down to the Super Bowl and got whipped. Browns are bringing back now year two Kevin Stefanski. They've got Odell Beckham Jr. returning. How much more explosive could this offense be? Does Jadeveon Clowney have anything left in the tank, pairing him on the other side of the line from Myles Garrett? This is a team in the Browns with reason for lots of optimism. On the other side of the ball, Kansas City Chiefs, best quarterback in the NFL. But Patrick Mahomes took a beating a bit, certainly in the Super Bowl, over the course of the year. The Chiefs never really played at an incredibly high level down the stretch run of the season. Now, they went to the Super Bowl. They won two home playoff games. They looked pretty good against the Bills. But by and large, the Chiefs' remade offensive line did not look anywhere near as dominant as they did the year before when they won the Super Bowl. They played to the level of competition. You know that the Browns are going to be sky high coming in for this game. Will the same thing be true of potentially the Kansas City Chiefs or not? Second best game to me by far, Baker Mayfield and the Browns on the road against Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. And the best game, it's no surprise, it's the opening Thursday night football game. And by the way, some of you may disagree with my list. You can tweet me at Clay Travis. Let me know what game you think is the best for the NFL week one. Dallas Cowboys on the road against Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is must-see television. This is why the NFL puts on a more entertaining and a better product than anyone. Opening Thursday night game, Brady and the Bucs probably going to get their NFL championship rings. Brady, 44 years old, whatever the heck he is, ageless wonder. I saw where some of the coaches said, hey, we think Brady can play till he's 50 years old. Maybe he will. Maybe we still got years and years left of Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Seventh Super Bowl championship. Dak Prescott, coming off of that devastating injury that he suffered last year, has since signed a $160 million contract. The future and the fate of the Dallas Cowboys clearly rests on Dak Prescott's shoulders. They have let it be known that he is their quarterback for years to come now. Jerry Jones has stocked this offense with as good of wide receivers as exists anywhere in the NFL. Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and CeeDee Lamb, not to mention Zeke Elliott. Can he return to some form of the normal form that we got used to with Ezekiel Elliott before he got his big money contract and frankly has not performed at the same level? Brady makes the Bucs matter on a level that very few players have ever been able to make their teams matter. And already defending champion, I cannot wait to see what is going to happen in that game down in Tampa. My five biggest and best games as you break down the overall lineup. Dallas, Tampa Bay is the best. Browns, Chiefs, the second best. Dolphins, Patriots, the third best. Steelers, Bills, the fourth best. And Seattle on the road against Indianapolis is the fifth best game. We'll talk about this. We're scheduled to anyway with Will Kane next. Usually joins us on Wednesday, joining us on Thursday of this week. We will discuss all this and more with him.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Will, I got to do something cool on Tuesday and Wednesday. I don't know if you – have you ever gotten to tour a distillery or ever spend any time around them? I don't know if you're a big bourbon or whiskey guy. It wouldn't surprise me if you are. I've kind of worked my way into being a pretty big fan of both, and I got to go to the distillery in Frankfort for Buffalo Trace, and they make a lot of – they make Weller. You're a Texan. Weller has been a big product down in the state of Texas for a long time. Pappy Van Winkle, like all these different really cool different flavors. And it was just an awesome experience to get to go tour the place.
I saw that. I saw you posted about touring the Buffalo Trace distillery.
Yes.
I am not to disappoint you here. Yes, I'm a big bourbon whiskey fan. But I'll give you my power rankings really quickly, Clay.
Yeah.
At number three, Irish whiskey. I do like something about the dry bite of a Jameson when I don't want to taste too much sweetness. But at number two, I will give you bourbon. I like bourbon. And Buffalo Trace, and this is not gratuitous because I'm not getting paid, I think it's a really good bang for your buck, bourbon, Buffalo Trace. But at number one, and I don't know if this makes me fancy pants or Texan, I think it's probably a little bit of both, but at number one is tequila. It has risen to number one for me just in the past, I would say, 18 months.
Really? Yeah.
And no, it's the George Clooney thing, and I think The Rock has a tequila, and everybody has a tequila. Here's what I found, man. Very little hangover, nice happy buzz, tastes great if you buy top shelf. Always buy top shelf. I don't care how snooty that is. If you get yourself a good tequila, it's like drinking dessert.
It is. I mean, I like a little bit of everything, right? So let's be honest. But it is kind of amazing the cycle of what becomes popular, right? Because I was talking about this with the bourbon guys. Bourbon has gotten white hot. Tequila has gotten white hot. Vodka, which I would say was probably your standard, maybe most reliable, maybe liquor back in the day, right? Like that liquor seems to, with vodka, have declined. Meanwhile, bourbon, and they were saying, you know, it's interesting because some people trace the rise of bourbon and whiskey to Mad Men. And he's like, you know, we were talking to the guide as we walked around and looked. He's like, I don't know how much you can attribute to, you know, just kind of cultural standards changing. And certainly with like the 1960s era tight suits, that came roaring back because of Mad Men, the skinny ties, all that stuff. But it is kind of interesting cyclically to think about what cycles up and doesn't. For instance, what you're a Texan. What do you attribute tequila rising on your liquor power rankings having to do with? Is it the quality of tequila is getting better? And like, as you get older, you're like, I don't want to necessarily have a hangover from something. Like, what would you attribute it to?
Okay, I love this conversation. So first, I would just attribute it to a sophisticated palate, of course,
yeah,
man. I know
right,
what I'm
right.
doing, and I like it. No, but I'm serious. If I drink a glass of Classe Azul, which is that fancy one in the white and blue ceramic bottle, if I drink a glass of one of those, and I'm not a wine guy. Like, I can't sniff the notes and taste the layers on wine. I don't get that. But I can do that with that tequila. I can taste all the different flavors in there. But let's go to marketing for a minute. So I read this article. I'm somewhat entrepreneurial, not on your level. We know your level of entrepreneurship. Everyone should know at this point, Clay's level of entrepreneurship. But, you know, I love marketing. I love building businesses. So I read this article. I'm going to go 10 years ago to your vodka point. And it was talking about how Red Bull became one of the biggest drinks in the world. And the article was awesome. It said, here you have, what, a 6-ounce drink that is terrible for you and objectively tastes bad. And yet it's a massive market driver. So why? And the answer is all marketing. The guy that created Red Bull made this marketing phenomenon. Gives you wings, you need the energy. And it said in this article, other drinks built upon marketing. And it said Grey Goose vodka. Grey Goose vodka is not better than your normal well vodka. And I thought, that's fascinating. And I told my brother-in-law, who really liked vodka, to your point about 10 years ago, and he listened to me. He listened to me explain this, and then he ordered a Grey Goose martini. So, in other words, the marketing's so strong that I can explain it, and it doesn't matter. Tequila has moved from Jose Cuervo at 2 a.m., let's make sure we walk out of this bar stumbling, to something now that in my 40s, I want to just drink. I don't want to mess it up with any kind of mixer. I just, at most, ice, and it's nice. No hangover, and I can enjoy it. But I can't deny the power of marketing is probably playing some role in there.
Do you know, I got to give credit because iHeart, I don't know if you know Bob Pittman. I know him just a little bit. But he has, if you like tequila, he has a tequila called, and I might miss, Casa Dragones, right? Like basically dragons with an N-E-S.
I've had that.
It's phenomenal, yeah. Right? I mean, it's really, really good stuff. And I'm kind of like you. I mean, I'm not pretending to have like some incredibly refined palate. And certainly I've been to a lot of wine tastings over the years. Like I bet pretty much every husband or boyfriend has at some point you've been out at a winery. And I think it's fun. But, the sophisticated palate, like I don't have the difference, you know, to be able to define every single thing. But I do think you can tell what goes down easy and what doesn't.
Yes, and I'll say this, just to show that I'm not proclaiming the sophisticated palate. I'm no snooty beer drinker either. Like, yeah. I don't like IPAs. I don't want a ton of flavor in my beer. I like Miller Lite. I like what it amounts to.
Yeah.
I like ice cold water, essentially, when it comes to beer.
Yes. That is pretty fantastic. I can tell a little bit with beer. I'm not as great with wine, but I do think the difference on the liquor is what goes down smooth and what doesn't, right? And so I'm kind of fascinated by that. And anyway, I spent a couple of days this week kind of diving in, and I feel like I have a little bit more knowledge than I did before, which is pretty cool. We're talking to Will Cain, by the way, at Will Cain on Twitter. You can follow him on there. You can listen to his new podcast, which is pretty outstanding. Also, weekend 6 to 10 a.m. with Fox and Friends. And also, this is pretty awesome, you're going to be hosting 7 p.m. Eastern, I believe, next week, your own show. Big time deal, being able to sit behind the wheel, so to speak, and run it. That's going to be awesome.
Man, I'm excited about it. Yeah, I'll be hosting the 7 p.m. Fox News primetime show next week. I'm just going to have to say, let her rip. I'm just going to have to do my thing. You know, like you, I've done a 3-hour radio show every day. This is my chance to sort of spread my wings, do what it is I like to do. And I think we'll probably work in Clay Travis at some point here.
I'm going to try. I'm hopeful that I'll be able to come on as one of your guests. I'm sure you're going to do a fantastic job, and that's an awesome next step for you to be able to host. I mean, it'll be millions of people watching as that hour is wildly popular, leading into Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and Laura Ingraham. I mean, just a really big-time collection of talent, and that's awesome for you. So you can check Will out there. All right, speaking of awesome for you, are you excited, apprehensive, are you terrified of the Cowboys, Dak Prescott, returning and going head-to-head with Tom Brady, the opening Thursday night game of the NFL season?
Excited. Take the points. Cowboys plus 6.5, I like it. I really do, Clay, and I know I'm a homer, and I know I just went through the schedule, and I go, 16-1.
Yeah, right.
16-1,
yeah.
They'll lose to the Chiefs. And I'm not stealing Greenberg's bit. I know that I'm really over-optimistic on this schedule. But, yeah, I'm excited to play Tom Brady. I'm excited to play the Bucs. And I do think you should take the points. I think Dak's going to come back roaring strong. He's going to be incredible this year. No one, I don't think any team in the league has surrounded their quarterback with more weapons. And I think the Cowboys are going to score a ton of points. The only question for the Dallas Cowboys is, can they stop anyone on any given drive?
Did you see Brady? I mean, I'm kind of fascinated by this. The Bucs GM came out and said, hey, I think Tom Brady can play till he's 50. He's going to be 44. And we already know that he's basically broken the age dynamic at the quarterback position in the NFL. Even if he only played one more year, there's never been anybody like Brady. How many more years is Tom Brady a starting quarterback in the NFL right now, if I had to set an over-under with you? So we obviously know he's going to play this year.
Well, first, if I'm making predictions, I used to say this when I was on ESPN. Everyone else can leave the party whenever they want. I'm going to hit the lights. So I'm not going to accept that Tom Brady is leaving before anyone else. So Max Kellerman, of course, made his bones on this cliff theory. And here's the thing about Max and his cliff theory. He based that, like some accountant, on an actuarial table. Like he went and he looked at Warren Moon's career and Brett Favre's career and Rich Gannon's career, anybody that played late in the life, and he realized, well, about 40, 41, no one plays great beyond that.
That's right.
And I used to argue to Max, you know, at some level that makes sense if you're an insurance adjuster. But you are talking about one of the greatest athletes, in my estimation, the greatest team sports competitor, and I mean that. I mean that above other names that other people are getting mad about right now in their head, like MJ. Yeah. I think Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. And I said, you're doing that. You're applying, like, averages to someone who is way beyond average. So if you tell me, can Tom play till he's 50? Why not? He's already, to finish off Max's metaphor, he's already flown over the cliff. He's sprouted wings. Who's going to predict where he lands at this point? He's flying. I wouldn't know, man. Over under, 3 to 4 more years. I mean,
it's wild, right?
I think that's a fair 3 to 4 is a fair over under.
It's wild because for so many years I've sat around and been like, well, I better enjoy this Tom Brady game because we might not see it again, right? Brady versus Rodgers, Brady versus Manning. And if those games end up not happening anymore, and we just saw the most recent Brady Breeze in the postseason, but if those games don't happen anymore, it's not ever been because Brady decides to hang it up. And I just feel like this guy has got – I don't think that's a crazy number. I mean, look, anybody can get injured. We obviously have seen what happens to guys like Alex Smith. Sometimes a devastating injury can happen. Brady lost a season to a knee injury back in the day. But I just feel like his performance down the stretch against the Bucks, even without a lot of time to work with his team because of COVID, this coming season – I mean, I feel like he's going to be off the charts with all the time that he's had to work and with the fact that all 22 starters return.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He had to work himself into that team and those weapons in a shortened COVID training season. What's it like with a full year of training behind him? You would have to just assume better. And by the way, on these predictions about how long he can go, we have to acknowledge that the game is moving in his direction, meaning quarterbacks, as we know, get hit less. The rules favor offensive players, so it's not as hard for him as it was early in his career to complete a pass. Not just how many times he's getting touched, but how many times his receivers are getting touched. So the game is moving in his direction where it's essentially more of a non-contact game, so a 47-year-old could survive.
Yeah, and we don't know exactly how long Brady's going to continue to roll, but we do know, look, when you look at these rookies, we know that Trevor Lawrence is going to start, and one of the guys that may be starting alongside of him is Tim Tebow. How intrigued are you by the idea of Tim Tebow, 33-year-old tight end for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Well, individually, probably not as intrigued as everyone else. Like, I mean, I'm intrigued more than some other, you know, third, fourth string tight end that they signed. Is it enough to make me go, wow, I'm paying attention to Jags training camp? No. But if he makes the team, yes, I'm much more interested in the Jags. Of course, you know, Clay, I'm intrigued by the ridiculous overreaction to the Jags giving Tim Tebow a shot. That is
Yes. Why do you think that I mean, everything about Tim Tebow, except probably Tim Tebow himself, has been on steroids since he was a freshman at Florida, right? And I've seen this since he was 18 years old, the mania that he creates and has dealt with all the way through. In fact, Will, I mean, we get used to seeing athletes and we get used to seeing celebrities in what we do. I have never seen anything like when Tim Tebow was on Radio Row, right? I mean, Beyonce, Madonna, like they all come through Radio Row at some point in time. But you feel as if there is true electricity in the air relatively rarely. Tebow being on Radio Row the year after, I believe it was, that he won the postseason game with the Broncos against the Steelers, hit Demaryius Thomas on that crossing route in overtime to win that game. I've never seen anything like it. The same thing had happened, by the way, at SEC Media Days when Tebow was in the building, when everybody was losing their minds. And look, you're used to Nick Sabans of the world, Cam Newton, Joe Burrow. I mean, there's lots of big names, Johnny Manziel. I've never seen a reaction, a frenzy like Tebow produces in the world of sports.
Yeah, and there's a couple of reasons. And the first two reasons create lovers and create haters. So for whatever reason, you know, wearing your religion on your sleeve creates haters, but it also creates lovers. You know, I have nephews that grew up in Odessa, Texas. My sons weren't born yet, really, to root for Tim Tebow, and they loved him because he was honest and open about his Christianity.
Yep.
It's odd. I don't totally get it, but that's clearly one of the motivating factors behind why people hate him. It just is, and I can't really explain it. The other number two is this sort of wholesome image, independent of Christianity. People don't like wholesome; they like bad boys. You know, the Cowboys draft, we were talking about Cowboys schedule, but the Cowboys draft, they took a ton of character concerns. And I tweeted about that, like, wow, the Jason Garrett days of Jason Garrett used to use the phrase right kind of guy. Those days are over. And I had a ton of people go, like, who cares? We were good in the 90s when we had bad guys. And what are you? We're not trying to put together choir guys. But those same people, they'll be destroying the Cowboys for drafting these guys if they get suspended.
Oh,
right?
Of course, yes.
So I don't really know, but there's an attraction to the bad boy and not the good guy that Tim Tebow is from a lot of fans. And then I think his pro career, you talk about after the Broncos win, that's against all odds, against the doubter story, you know, and that's going to make people love and hate you as well. He wasn't supposed to be this good. Everybody's been dogging him. And then finally, it's race. You know, and that's – and I don't – look – The reaction the last 2 days has been 100% about race. You know, his career and his reputation over his life has been about his religion, but the last 2 days, that's been about race. And that's just – the bottom line, Clay, is this. On the people that are mad at Tim Tebow for getting an opportunity because he's white are racist. They just don't see the world through anything but a lens of skin color. That's just how they do it. And at this point, we're going to have to start accepting that's who they are. They are racists, and we need to start calling them out for what they are, racists.
That is a hell of a way to get to a break. Come back with us for like 5 more minutes.
Yep, you got it.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tebow, we were just talking about him, potentially with the Jags. Will Cain hanging out with us to close out the Thursday edition of the program. Will, for a long time, and you know this, there are relatively few athletes you could say that athlete's name is and just say open phone lines and anybody could come in and everybody would have an opinion. Tim Tebow is one of those guys. LeBron James is one of those guys. You know, probably over time, Tom Brady has turned into one of those guys. Johnny Manziel used to be one of those guys. A lot of these guys are very polarizing, but most of them have a reason for you to dislike them, right? Like, they've done something. Your point on Tebow is so well said. Like, the guy is basically without flaw, yet that same persona makes him incredibly polarizing. I'm using, as an example, Johnny Manziel. Both SEC quarterbacks. Johnny Manziel, before we knew whether or not he was going to be a success in the NFL, everybody had a strong opinion of him, right? But Johnny Manziel had done a lot of things where you could be like, okay, I love this dude, I hate this guy. LeBron James, everybody has an opinion on him. He's done a lot of things. Tiger Woods was another guy like that that just moved the needle, right? Everybody had an opinion.
Right.
Really, Tebow has never done anything. Like, what's the worst thing you can say that Tim Tebow's ever done? I'm not even sure we can come up with a reason that bad thing that Tim Tebow's ever done in the public eye.
No, and then therefore the reaction, you know, Tim Tebow's like a Rorschach test.
Yes.
You know, the ink blot test. You see in it what you want to see in it, and the truth is your reaction to Tim Tebow says more about you than it says about him. You are revealing who you are in your reaction to Tebow. I truly believe that. And by the way, I love your examples, and if you didn't use Woods, I was going to bring up Woods, and then, of course, in the sort of pre-viral age, Michael Jordan. And with Jordan and Woods, they were hot topics, phone lines light up, without really being controversial. I'm talking about before Woods' sex scandals.
Yeah.
You know, it was more just about who he was as a golfer, and people could listen or talk about Tiger all day just based upon his greatness, not unlike Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I think it's just that's what I've always found so amazing about the Tebow experience, because coming out of college, there have been the SEC for college football in particular can make big seismic stars, right? Particularly as the teams have gotten more and more dominant, and so you can run through guys. I mean, you're a Texas Longhorn guy, but Vince Young was an example of one of these guys that came into the NFL with a massive legacy with him. But the Cam Newtons, the Tim Tebows, the Johnny Manziels, a little bit of the Joe Burrows, guys who just had such transcendent seasons or such iconic plays that they sort of entered into the league with a legendary mantle attached to them. And I've never seen anything like the amount of people who just rooted desperately against Tebow. And there certainly are a lot of people that root for him. But to me, it's always a lot easier to understand why a guy can have fans than why a guy can have haters. And the Tebow hate has just never made sense to me.
No, it really.
I mean, if you had a daughter and she married Tim Tebow, or if you had a son and he grew up like Tim Tebow, I think almost every single person listening to us would be like, yeah, I'd be pretty happy about the way that I had parented. And I've gotten to know Tebow quite a bit, you know, just kind of casually over the years since that. And he doesn't seem to me to be an artificial guy. Like, he just kind of is the person in his public life. It seems to me very similar to the one that he is in his private life.
That's the key. They want to believe it's literally too good to be true. That it's fake. They want to believe it's a televangelist situation where secretly Tim Tebow is doing something that takes down this too good to be true, good guy, wholesome Christian image. I mean, that would be their favorite story that came along in quite some time. But you had more interaction with Tim than I have. I've had some through our ESPN employment, and I've never seen a crack in the facade. I've never seen that it is fake in any way. So they'll have to keep holding their breath on that. Hey, you brought up Texas. Here's a quick story. I know we're getting ready to leave. You know when Texas will be back?
When will that be?
Texas will be back when name, image, and likeness is fully in place. Because, boy, that's going to benefit the big boys. You brought up the SEC making stars. Texas has brand. Texas has attention, its own network and money. When name, image, and likeness comes in, Texas will be back.
That's an interesting point. I'm fascinated to see what name, image, and likeness does for so many different programs out there, not just the big schools, but also the small schools, because I think the big fish in a small pond factor could happen for, you know, like Southern Miss could end up with a five-star who's from near Hattiesburg, for instance. I'm just tossing Southern Miss out in a way they would never go to a school like Southern Miss. Maybe they would if they can get a car dealership deal, which is different than maybe being the 20th best guy on the Alabama roster. We'll break that down next week, because I do think the
next
name, image, and likeness is fascinating. Knock it out this week. We'll talk about next week's activities as well. That's Will Cain. Go follow him on Twitter. Thank you for hanging out with us. I'm Clay Travis. Search out my name, Clay Travis. Search out Outkick. Thursday in the books. We'll be back tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.